Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to episode 266 of the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and as always, you can contact me directly, director@ciaops.com, and on the Twitters at directorcia. So some updates here from Microsoft that I think are worth your time having a look at. The first one here is an article called Step-by-Step Threat Protection in Microsoft Defender for Office 365. So when we use a license like Microsoft 365 Business Premium, we also get an additional mail hygiene capability called Microsoft Defender for Office 365. So basically additional filtering. And this enhances what's already been provided with Exchange Online. Now, where this article is really good is that it runs through each of the individual phases or the sections of the protection here. So it will go through, for example, explain edge protection, sender intelligence, content filtering, post-delivery protection, and give you an overall understanding of the filtering stack diagram. So the idea here is that if you want to better understand the filtering process that emails run through when going through Exchange Online and Defender for Office 365, I recommend you take a look at this article. Got some good diagrams in there. Helps you understand all the protection that Microsoft does put in place for when emails are, again, delivered into the environment. Now, another good article here is that Microsoft is announcing the iOS iPad OS Security Configuration Framework. So this is aimed at the endpoint manager side of the house, and this is going to basically help you provide best practices, settings, and recommendations around what settings should be configured for iOS and iPad. So again, some really great recommendations there if you're using things like Intune and Endpoint Manager to set compliance and set configuration for these devices. It's always good to have a set of best practices, recommendations to rely on, to use as your starting point. And again, if you are interested in that for iOS, I can tell you to go and have a look, read through that article, see all the options that Microsoft have set. And of course, there are similar settings for Android and also Windows 10 as well, and they're covered off in that article. Now, another interesting thing here is Microsoft has announced a public preview of the OneDrive Sync client, a 64-bit version of that. I've downloaded that, put it on my machines, working well. I haven't had any troubles with it. However, it's interesting to have a think about how long we've had the 32-bit client, and all our machines effectively now are 64-bit. So the idea with this is I think it will give better stability and will also obviously give better performance and probably also better scalability. So we might be able to get past those current limits of the Microsoft Sync, which is about 300,000 documents in total. So again, look out maybe for announcement around that being increased once you have a 64-bit version of the Sync clients there. So again, go in, have a look at that article, download it. I've put it on there. It is in public preview. Just be mindful of that. It's not quite production yet, but certainly recommend it. I've had no issues with it. And again, I think it will improve the stability of any syncing experience that you're using. Now, another handy little article from Microsoft is how to block blind CC messages to a distribution group in Exchange Online. So if you've ever had that situation where people will reply to messages and then it ends up in a distribution list and you just end up with messages after messages after messages, this again is a little setting you can go in and use via PowerShell to basically block that capability. So if you do want to go in there and to block that capability with BCC messages to a distribution group, then go and have a look at that article. And again, all the links to these will be in the show notes so that you can go and review them. Now, around the Microsoft Viva product or service that was announced recently, we've also got some information here about installing the Viva connections. So you'll be able to go in and set that up. I think it's a bit clunky at the moment because obviously it's in preview there and we have to go in and create an app package. But if you really want to be at the cutting edge, then certainly this document here will show you how to go in, set all that up, what's involved, how to get that into your tenant so you can go and experience the Viva connections as well. If you are a bit patient, I think we'll see this be simplified down the track in a little while. So again, you're not going to miss out, I don't think. But if you really want to be on the cutting edge, there's a document here that will show you how to go and set that up for your environment today. Now, there's also how to get a trial for Viva Topics. So that was Viva Connections. This is now Viva Topics. Again, this will be a paid license and some information there as to sort of what to expect with this. But remember, the idea here is the topics is going to, you know, surface basically those common terms inside your business and give people that searchability through that. And again, you can go and set this up for a trial. So again, Viva Topics, how to get started with that. Again, the document is there for you to go and have a look at. Now, one of the big things Microsoft has been on, I've seen lately, around security is the focus on firmware and the attacks that it is subject to. So they put a lot of work in there. There's an article here that that will be available. Again, it's going to talk about the studies of why it's important to protect against firmware attacks and how Microsoft is helping you to eliminate these. And typically, this is going to be a combination of hardware and software. Certainly worthwhile reading. And again, it's another vector that people could start using to gain access to machines. So I would certainly recommend you have a look at that, read through it, understand what's possible or what vector may be exposed, and then how Microsoft is going to help to protect, you know, that's against those sort of threats. Now, recently, SharePoint celebrated its 20th birthday. So there's some information here about, obviously, you know, the celebration of Microsoft's, one of Microsoft's major services, again, turning 20. It's a long time to be a successful product inside any IT environment, but it's also very interesting to look how it's moved from, you know, the on-prem into SharePoint Online, through all those iterations to what it is today. And again, still growing very, very successfully. So if you've been involved with SharePoint at any point through its history, I certainly recommend you go and have a look at this and again, experience and look back to, again, what we used to experience with the original version of SharePoint and how much it has changed and how much is going to continue to change again going forward. So a little bit of history there to again go in and experience if you have again been working with SharePoint anyway, shape or form. Now again, on the security front, there's a new threat and vulnerability management experience with Microsoft 365 Security. What we're seeing from Microsoft is that they are now beginning to consolidate a lot of these consoles for admin and security into a single experience, which is fantastic. Some of that is obviously still rolling out, but again, if you do have the licensing for things like, you know, Defender for Office 365, you're going to get, you know, the incidents, the investigations, the automated remediations, all of this is going to be brought together in a single console to make management much, much easier. So again, if you haven't looked at that, I'd certainly encourage you to do that. I'd also encourage you to go in and look at the new reporting or some of the improved reporting that Microsoft is making available for this. I did write an article, a blog article on what I found to be a really, 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 really powerful reporting mechanism that basically allows you to go in and view the filtering. So again, we talked about the reports that are available, basically the stepping through the phases that mail goes through as it's being filtered. But these new reports here also give you the capability, for example, to see the amount of email that was filtered out at each level. So if you want to go in and see what impact, you know, the edge filtering is having, and then the spam policy and the malware policy and, you know, things like DMARC are having on your, you know, the mails that are being processed or filtered out. Again, I'll put a link to the blog post I wrote. Go in and have a look at those reports. They're really, really cool and can also be scheduled to be delivered to you as well if you want to have a look at that. But again, go in and have a look at what Microsoft's doing with, you know, a lot of these consoles and bringing them together, making them simpler for people to go in and analyze the threats and also investigate them and so on. And with that, we've also got the threat analytics for Defender, Microsoft 365 Defender. So again, all of these sort of things are beginning to improve, ramp up, and add additional content and value around the Microsoft security stack. Now, the final one to finish off with that I suggest you go and have a look at is best practices for migrating to SharePoint and OneDrive. Again, a very common question that I face regularly is, okay, what's the best practice? How do I do it? What tools do I use? What approach should I take? So Microsoft's got a great little article here that goes through and it'll give you those sort of best practice recommendations and show you how to use the tools that they have integrated into things like Microsoft 365. Don't forget, there's also great third-party tools out there to allow you to do that as well. But it's always good to see what the recommendations are from the Microsoft side of the house. So again, I will take an opportunity to thank you very much for listening to this episode and the interview that will follow shortly. Remember, if you do have any feedback, please contact me, director@ciaops.com, on the Twitters @directorcia. And again, enjoy the interview. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. Back in the seat is a regular attendee of the podcast, Jeff Alexander. Welcome back.
Hey, Robert. How are you, mate?
Excellent.
Good to be back.
It's good to be back, finally virtually meeting again. It's like things have changed. It's been a long time since we've talked, probably prior pandemic. So yeah, it's good to catch up and see what's happening. So for those of you, for those out there who don't know Jeff, do you want to just give us a bit of background on who you are and your current role in Microsoft?
Yeah, so Jeff Alexander, I am a modern work architect in our Fast Track engineering organization. So I work in the Microsoft 365 Fast Track team. And essentially my role as a modern work architect is to work with larger customers to help them to deploy M365 services. And it's a role that's spread across all of the M365 stack as opposed to focusing on Windows and various other products. So it's a different role for me than I've had in the past, but it's a lot of fun, keeping me out of trouble for sure. And I think, what did you say? I'm probably older than Microsoft. Yeah, I've been at Microsoft coming up to 34 years in August.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft celebrated, what were their 46th birthday recently? So
they did, yeah. So I'm 34 in August 26th, I believe. It was a Wednesday in 1987 that I started. Mm. So, yeah, been around. Makes me feel old, but you get that.
I was about to say, you would have seen a lot of change. And obviously, you know, looking back on it, you would probably say that things are accelerating. Is that sort of how it feels at the moment?
In the last year, yes. Microsoft, you may have heard, your audience may have heard that Satya said, you know, a lot of organizations are going through 10 years of digital transformation in 1 year. And, you know, we've seen customers doing that. There's a lot of technology change that's coming at them. We've had to up our scale in regards to what we provide from a cloud services point of view. I think we saw over the last year, we saw a 700% increase in Teams usage, and we had to increase our capacity by something similar to that. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, particularly the last year, absolutely, it's grown tremendously.
Well, I think, again, speaking of the topic we sort of want to cover today is, obviously, we've had a huge amount of change. And, you know, I suppose in a way, we've sort of settled into, you know, a normal, let's call it, after going through lockdown and whatever, and we're still going through that. And we're moving to, again, what people seem to be calling a new normal, which again is probably some sort of hybrid, I can work, I can't work, on and off sort of thing. But I think probably the biggest challenge would seem to be, and again, I'd be interested in your thoughts and your experiences on the security side of things, because everybody's, you know, or most people have up and left and, you know, gone and worked from home. And I can't say that that would be a particular secure environment, at least initially. I mean, you know, what have you seen out there with this shift to remote working and then then I think, then probably after the fact thinking, oh, hang on, oh, what about this security thing that we need to worry about?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, we, in my team in particular, we had to kind of step up and start to provide more services around helping customers secure remote work. I mean, Microsoft, at the beginning of the pandemic, we sent 50,000 people home in Seattle alone. And that was a challenge for our internal IT department to, you know, like you said, who knows what's at the other end, what's in somebody's office, or how secure is that particular environment. So, you know, we had to do a fair bit to kind of tweak that to make sure that our users had a secure way of getting access to all the resources that they needed day to day. When I talk about our customers, a lot of customers that I work with and are not really at, I guess they're not up to the cloud journey in regards to a lot of other folks. They still run a lot of stuff on premises. You know, they patch devices with SCCM. They have a lot of internal applications. And then all of a sudden, the COVID crisis hit, and they had to send a large amount of people home. And to be honest with you, Skype wasn't coping with it. So a lot of customers had to rapidly roll out Teams. And what they found, and I don't know if you've seen this in customers you deal with, is that they redirected a lot of their network traffic through a VPN, right? And what we called hairpinning their traffic through a VPN, which did not scale very well at all in regards to the way that the users would work, right? So we worked with a lot of customers to help them turn on split tunneling so that they had a direct line to Office 365. That was one thing, is to make sure that their network could handle the load in regards to people being able to work from home and being able to do it in a way that they weren't going to have problems. I've had customers that I've worked with that had to join Teams calls on their mobile phone because they simply could not join Teams through a VPN. It was just not applicable. I don't know if you've seen that in your travels.
Well, I think it is very interesting because, again, you've had this well-cultivated, this well-structured infrastructure and, you know, connection to the cloud obviously growing and people dealing with that sort of, you know, in on demand as required. And like you said, all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, everybody's got to jump and move from to another location. And those now it's going from, you know, one office to maybe 40, 50 different, you know, individual offices, and then everybody trying to connect. And then, like I said, the security people come in and say, oh, no, you have to go through the VPN. And then, you know, from a poor end user's point of view, it's like, oh, you know, how do I set up the client? I've got to get this running, all the dramas with that. And then it's just not going to cut it, as you said.
So, and a lot of IT departments, particularly security teams, do not trust the cloud because they've done it a certain way for many, many years, right? And so they're not 100% trusting of cloud. They have to deal with a lot of regulation, whether it be the Essential Eight, whether it be, you know, any banking regulations or whatever it may be. They don't trust the cloud. I have customers that are only just now moving to Exchange Online, and you know, you and I've been known each other for a long time. You've been in Office 365 for a long time. I think a lot of our customers in the small and medium business space probably are a lot more agile when it comes to being able to adopt cloud services, and probably ahead in a lot of ways, right?
I think they've been forced to take that jump, and they haven't got the resources or necessarily the compliance restrictions. Like, oh, we just need to get this to work. Quick, how do we do it? Quick, move the data into this cloud service and we'll be good to go. Yeah. So yeah, definitely.
The second part is, the second part that I've seen is a lot of customers are now trying to move a lot of data into the cloud. So I've seen a lot of projects around moving data into SharePoint Online, moving data into OneDrive for Business. So a lot of customers, believe it or not, still have home drives. And so users have that old mapped H drive. That they might have an application running on it. And I'm working with customers now to move data into OneDrive for Business, you know, terabytes of data into OneDrive for Business. And my team, the Fast Track team, really started 6 years ago as a data migration platform in regards to be able to help customers migrate data into Exchange Online, into SharePoint Online. And, you know, so that is something that they're actually doing. And then once they move that data into SharePoint Online, then how do they look at DLP, you know, data loss prevention? So, you know, you mentioned before that you have a user that's at home. What do users normally do when they want to share a file? They just email it out to whoever. So customers are, a lot of what they're trying to do now is to work with us on how do I protect that data as it moves out of my organization. So we got a lot of customers now that are looking at Microsoft's DLP technologies. You know, so that is things like, you know, Microsoft Information Protection, labeling of documents. What happens when a document leaves an organization? Protecting that document when it goes to a USB. So there's a lot of those capabilities. Plus, we're also seeing a lot of customers that are looking very much, the endpoint becomes a very big attack vector. So the endpoint itself needs to be run, you know, needs to be secure. So how do we patch those devices and make sure those devices are up to date? So it's become a much more important thing now to be able to patch devices. So I've seen a lot of, I've had a lot of conversations with customers wanting to implement the Cloud Management Gateway, which is a part of SCCM that allows you to patch devices over the internet so that those devices don't have to actually come in through a VPN. Because traditionally what a lot of customers would do in order for them to do major updates or patch devices, they would have to bring them into an office. I mean, remember those days when you had to bring a device into an office to do a major update because you had to be line of sight to the domain controller. So, you know, they want to be able to patch devices on the internet. So there's a couple of things that they're talking to us about, which is the Cloud Management Gateway, which allows you to patch devices over the internet. There's also what we're recommending to a lot of customers is if that you do have an SCCM infrastructure, is to tenant attach it or cloud attach it to Intune so that you can manage your existing devices in the cloud and then turn on technologies like co-management in Config Manager to attach it to Intune. And then you're able to start to move workloads over to the cloud in a much more structured way. But what you end up doing is you take your existing SCCM infrastructure and give it the cloud signals to make it a, what we call an intelligent edge so that SCCM becomes a little bit more valuable to you because it's now connected to the cloud and you can actually use Microsoft Endpoint Manager console to manage all those devices. So, you know, that ability to be able to patch those devices, no matter where they are, no matter what, whether they're at home, whether they're at, you know, a coffee shop, because, you know, people get bored sitting in their home office all the time. So they go up to the local coffee shop or whatever. You need to be able to manage those devices on the internet. And that's very, very important. So a lot of customers I work with are asking about those capabilities, deploying those capabilities. They're also moving to our Defender for Endpoint, which is our built-in Defender built on top of the built into the operating system, and to be able to monitor that with our you know, extended capabilities in the cloud. So that's a big part of what we're actually doing. And then I'm working with a lot of customers on Defender for Office 365 to be able to further, that used to be the old ATP for Exchange. And that allows us to kind of, you know, manage phishing and malicious emails that come in. So there's a lot of activities going on in my customer base for that as well.
Yeah, I've got to admit that on the security side, I use Defender for Endpoints. I use Defender for Office 365, as it's now called, and the integration is the real key. I think the products are superior standalone, you know, and the Gartner Magic Quadrant, you know, confirms that. But the overall winner here, I think that, you know, the slam dunk here is just the integration. And again, to me, the best product that illustrates this is Azure Sentinel. To me, Azure Sentinel is such a no-brainer thing to just, you know, have on the top of your stack, feed all your signals into. And that's what I look at every single day when I start my day and want to get an overview of the security posture of my own personal environment. It's like, okay, do I need to worry about this? Okay, no, I'm good to go. Or let me go and investigate this. So
yeah, and that's a winner. Exactly right. And it's the integration of the stack, right? I mean, we're putting a lot of, One of the things that we're actually doing a lot of work on is to consolidate the number of consoles that we have. And you know that we have a lot of consoles across the M365 platform. I think last I counted, it was around 24 or something like that. They're trying to get down to 7. And right now, a lot of that consolidation is happening in Security Center. So security.microsoft.com. That has all the signals from our advanced hunting capability. Plus, it also has the signals from Defender for Office 365, Defender for Endpoint, and Defender for Identity, right? So it's about making sure that security operations centers, or SOCs as they're often called, are going to have that ability to be able to see what's going on in their environment. And then we've now, I don't know if you know, but we've got connectors into Sentinel now, which is really good, because Sentinel is it's not in my remit as a product in regards to M365, but it is a very important part of the overall stack, because it's on the Azure side and it's our cloud SIEM, right? So I don't know how you pronounce that, whether it's SIEM, I'm not sure exactly how that's pronounced, but it's a key component of that. And, you know, customers want to see how they stack up, you know, and a lot of our security scores, like productivity score, secure score, Azure AD secure score, customers want to kind of see what are the things that they actually need to do to be able to secure their devices. You know, and if I don't know if you've ever heard of the M365 golden config. I may have mentioned that to you at some time, but these are a set of technologies that we recommend for work and also for securing devices, you know, turning on things like multi-factor authentication. It amazes me how many customers don't have MFA turned on.
The stats are worrying on that, I must admit. It's astonishing.
It's astonishing because it's like it'll mitigate 99% of attacks just by doing that. And nowadays, with the authenticator apps that are out there, Microsoft just announced a whole bunch of things around zero trust that we're actually working on. And we're making it, you know, we're really kind of moving to a point where we have no passwords. And, you know, that there's a lot of great things that we're doing in Azure AD to make that a reality, right? And so, you know, at Microsoft internally, we have what we have 1-year passwords, because we don't actually have to change our password. We only do it once a year, but we're eventually going to move to no passwords at all. And because if you allow, you know, back in the day when you had to change your password every 70 days,
just an exclamation mark or a one to the end,
and attackers know that, it drives the wrong behavior. It's funny the looks I get, and I don't get it as much these days when I'm on Teams calls, but I can just see the looks in the room when I say, don't change your passwords. We are on 1-year passwords. And people kind of go, what? You know, and it's like, because it drives the wrong behavior. It drives people to change their passwords to an easily guessed password. Mm. And these are some of the things that, you know, customers are trying to do when they're securing endpoint devices. And I think about, I'm also in my role of M365. I'm also in Fast Track. We have Surface as one of our benefit offerings. And Surface does a whole bunch of things to make sure that a device is what we call chip to cloud, making sure that the device is secure from the chip all the way up to the cloud. And Surface is one of the first secure core PCs that are out there to make sure that we have the device itself is very, very secure. So it's one of the advantages that we have from that platform. There's just a whole bunch of things that customers are now having to look at as more and more of their users are not inside the four walls of the firewall appliance that's at the edge of their network, right?
So do you find that the customers that you talk to, would you classify their understanding, their appreciation of the landscape, the security, the threats that they're facing, as high? Or would you say that they're still pretty oblivious, or they haven't been paying attention to, you know, some of the sophisticated attacks we're seeing, the typical approaches? Because to me, it seems, again, amazing in this day and age that we still get the amount of major breaches across all products. And again, when you analyze it, it's like, well, hang on, all this basic stuff you didn't turn on. Why didn't you turn on this stuff. And I do note that, you know, Microsoft is beginning to enforce some of these, you know, some of these security requirements out of the box because, again, people just don't seem to be turning it on. I mean, how are you finding customers? Are they security aware or are they just basically being oblivious to the whole fact?
They're security aware, but they're security aware in an on-premises way of thinking. Right. So they put the devices at the edge of their network and they do the posture checking at the edge of their network. Right. They very much look at it from a certificate point of view. I have customers that say that they have to have a certificate on the device, have that verified by a firewall appliance before that device is actually considered to be, a compliant device. Right. Mm. So they look at it in an on-premises way. So they err on the side of more security, lots of agents on the device. I mean, you know, you've probably worked places where you get a device and it's got like security agents all over the place.
Exactly.
You know, we don't recommend that approach because what you're doing there is you're getting in the way of user productivity. Mm. And so they tend to do err on the side of more security and less productivity. But that's actually changing as the younger workforce comes into work now. They expect a modern device. They expect a device that's going to allow them to be productive. So what we're trying to do is to have an environment that users are going to love and that's going to be trusted by the IT department. So it's a journey. Different customers are at different stages in their journey when it comes to cloud. And they, they have a longstanding way of doing things. And it typically comes from security teams in these larger organizations. The end user compute teams want to actually do more to help their users be productive. And oftentimes the security teams are the ones that are the laggards that are holding people behind, right? So they're certainly aware of it. They just have a different mindset in the way that they actually look at it.
I think one of the big ones that I've sort of really, I suppose, taken to or really think's a major benefit, apart, obviously MFA I think is a no-brainer, but I also think conditional access. I mean, I can see this beginning mm-hmm. to grow into this capability effectively to be continuously monitoring the user, the device, the environment, to make sure that it's always compliant and it doesn't slip out of that. Or there's, I think, again, there's so much that can be said for conditional access as an additional layer of protection, because again, that will step in once there has been a successful login and then enforce things like MFA and compliant devices. Mm. And again, I think that's one of the major things that a lot of businesses overlook is, again, setting up these effective conditional access policies.
Yeah, and I was an identity technical specialist for 3 years, and conditional access is the secret sauce, right? It is the foundation of our zero trust architecture. Because basically, when you think about zero trust, is that you have to trust nothing, and challenge everything, right? So don't trust anything, and make sure that devices themselves are going to have to prove their trust through conditional access policies, right? So it's really important to make sure that we have those policies in place to be able to do stuff and make sure that the user's device, the conditional access, absolutely, and working with other tools like Microsoft Cloud App Security, working with Intune. This also comes down to the whole stack, because conditional access even works with Microsoft Edge Chromium, right? So you have the ability to do conditional access policies within Edge Chromium, which is fantastic. So it's just going from strength to strength.
And I think, again, what we're seeing here is, as I said, this move, this shift to this cloud management with, Intune originally, which is, a relatively old product when you think about it. It's been around quite a long time, and now we're getting into this endpoint manager. Now, one of the things I think that, again, the way to the future is this Windows 10 cloud config. There's a site out there that you can have a look. And the next step, which I saw recently, is that Microsoft is beginning to provide automation around this. So you can click a couple of buttons, put some information in, and it will actually create these policies for you. At the moment, it's relatively basic and gives you flexibility.
I set up that cloud config in about 10 minutes.
Yeah,
in one of my demo tenants, and the cloud config, we had a session with the guy in the product team recently that did cloud config, and it's one of the really cool things that we're doing in Intune, or Microsoft Endpoint Manager, to be able to make sure that it's easy for organizations, and it's really good for your audience, easy for them to set up a PC that's going to be secure, productive, and easy to manage, right? And you know, the whole autopilot thing is something I'm seeing a lot of customers are very, very are interested in autopilot, because they want to get away from this doing SOEs, standard operating environments. Yeah. They want to get to this whole model of being able to, and this has been something that's been very, very prevalent in COVID, is that, you know, we've had a lot of employees at Microsoft that started during the pandemic. And we don't ship devices to them. They don't have to come into an office to get that device. It gets shipped to their house. Mm. They turn the device on and they put their Microsoft ID in. And I think now you don't even need to type a password. I just ordered a Surface Laptop 4. And I'll turn that on in about 10 minutes. I have a working, productive device connected to my network, Office installed. OneDrive for Business all set up, VPN configured. My VPN gets automatically pushed down from Intune, and I can just reset that device. If I have a problem with the device, I can just go straight back to where I was working. There's none of this having to have a SOE on it or anything that kind of stuff, because the best SOE is the operating system that comes with the device. And a lot of of course Surface supports autopilot. But also major vendors like Lenovo, Dell, and HP all have autopilot support. And I've worked with some of those manufacturers to be able to do autopilot inside organizations. And it becomes part of an organization's procurement process, right? So if you bought 25 devices from one of those manufacturers, they can upload the device IDs into your Intune console. And when that device hits the internet, it belongs to that organization. And we have a flag in the Ubi experience in the Windows setup that says, is autopilot yes or no? And when it does that, it'll actually flip to the policies that the administrator says for that particular group of devices. So it's really powerful technology in the way that we actually can manage those devices. And I'm seeing a huge interest from customers for that.
I think the big benefit, especially, to resellers or IT pros out there, again, is that this still requires policy to set up. This still requires some back-end configuration and understanding and getting it to the point. But the end user experience now is so much slicker than it ever used to be, so much easier. But there still is that technical requirement to set this up. But a knowledge of these new technologies and approaches is where the investment needs to be made, or the change from the on-prem way of doing things to this new world. And again, once you do that, like I said, there are so many benefits. So again, like I said, the ability to reprovision a machine. So when one employee leaves, you do autopilot reset, and that machine can then be handed off to the next employee, or it can be wiped. It captures the serial numbers. All the policies get applied immediately, and you can look at the summary of that in your Endpoint Manager console. You can report on that. I also like the new desktop analytics, so we can look at how quickly a machine boots up and how long it takes, and anything that's holding that sort of experience up is another huge benefit as well. That approach
desktop,
just makes all.
And desktop analytics is really part of our overall servicing strategy for Windows. Because customers that are coming from older versions of Windows, or if they're coming from a previous feature release, they need to be able to monitor that project to understand how they're going in regards to the updates. And then Endpoint Analytics, as you said, which was released probably a few months ago, gives us all that performance data, how fast are the devices booting, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of customers are very interested in that, because that's a set of signals that they didn't have before, or they had to actually purchase from third parties. And it was quite a complicated infrastructure. Now it's just part of desktop analytics, and it's connected that way. So it's really, really good to be able to get that end-to-end understanding of what's going on with those devices. Because, user ring up the help desk and say, my machine's running slow. And, how many IT pros do you know that wouldn't have a clue as to, any data that the user has, or they can't really say, they have any intelligent data about that statement, right? So, you know, they have to get logs, they have to work with the user. Whereas if they have that data in our cloud, and this is the whole part about being able to get signals from the cloud. Microsoft gets terabytes of signals, and you're not only getting the signals for your devices, but you're getting comparison data from all the other devices that we have managed in our system, right? So that's an important thing.
I think that's the big benefit. Again, that comes back to the security argument. I mean, Microsoft's security business, I think I thought was 11 billion US dollar market just on security. So the benefits of being large are really going to be where it's at going forward, because you can take all the signals from all these endpoints and cloud systems, run them through artificial intelligence, machine learning, and come back and say, you know what, we've seen this behavior before across multiple environments or devices, and we're beginning to see this on yours. You need to take this action or beware of this, or even, you know, having the cloud or the systems take, you know, automatic remediation action, or we've automatically blocked this, or we've locked this down, or we've throttled this to do that. So this size, and again, I think it's all about the signals now, and then being able to analyze those. And another good example, once again, is Azure Sentinel, where you feed all your logs and events into effectively a huge data lake, and then Azure Sentinel just picks through that, you know, overnight, and comes back and says, you know what, we might need to have a look at this in a bit more detail.
Yeah, classic case of that is Windows as a Service. My wife has a Surface Book 2, I believe, and I can't remember which update it was, which feature update it was. It might have been 20H2 or something like that. It was held back on that device because there was a there was an issue, right? And that wouldn't have, that doesn't happen without the signals we get in the cloud. So a really important thing for users and for IT organization is to make sure you're sending signal data to Microsoft, you know, and that's to our telemetry data. You can do this across organizations with group policy, but if you go onto a device and you go to privacy and you go into diagnostics and feedback, we have you know, options where you send diagnostics data to Microsoft. And if you send that data, desktop analytics reads that data, endpoint analytics reads that data, but it's also for when we're doing updates through Windows as a Service, we can get that diagnostic data and we're able to actually get that telemetry to say, okay, well, you've got this X number, this device, we're gonna hold that update so that, because we've detected a problem. And so that we're gonna give you that device when it's actually ready for your device, right? So that's a really good example of how the tremendous amount of signals we get into the cloud benefit the overall community of devices that we have out there, right? And so, you know, I have customers that block telemetry for whatever regulatory reason, fair enough, but we do recommend that they at least do the required diagnostic data so that we can get that information about the device and make the whole experience better.
All right, so we are sort of approaching time. I'm sure we could speak about this on and on for quite a long period of time, but again, we do need to be respectful of the listeners' time here. So, Jeff, just to round things off, why don't you give us a bit of an idea of what Fast Track actually is, what it can solve for a customer of sort of, you know, all levels down to the SMB as well, and again, maybe how they can start engaging or taking advantage of those sort of resources.
Yeah, so Fast Track as an organization, there's two parts of Fast Track. I'm in the Microsoft 365 side of Fast Track. We also have an Azure Fast Track, but essentially what Fast Track is your advisor to deploy Microsoft 365 services. So Fast Track is available at no additional cost as part of a user's eligible subscription, whether it's E3 or whatever it is. Right. So Fast Track itself is broken down into kind of three areas. All customers have access to, excuse me, to our website. If you go to Microsoft.com/fasttrack and click on the resources tab, we have a whole bunch of self-serve planning and resources and documents and templates, which are best practices around deploying Microsoft 365 services. So we have that available to all customers. If you're a small to medium business and you have 150 licenses or more, then you have ongoing remote guidance from Fast Track. And the way that you can do that is on the Microsoft Fast Track site, which is that link that I just said before, you can actually request assistance. And we will get an engineer engaged with you to give you remote guidance. And it's essentially a phone call where they'll share best practices with you. We don't do any on, you know, keyboards. We expect customers to do all that work, but we will have remote guidance. And then for customers that are 500 license and above, they have help with data and email migration into the cloud. So it is generally targeted at enterprises for some of our larger accounts, but all customers can benefit from it through some of those self-service planning resources. So, you know, Fast Track has been around for about 6 years. It is an engineering organization. The advantage that we have is we have line of sight into all of the product groups. So part of what we also do is we provide feedback. Think of us as the internal user voice, where we provide feedback to the product team to get design changes and bug fixes to our products. So that's a definite advantage. There are other resources. Robert, I'm not sure if you've heard of a website called adoption.microsoft.com.
Yep. Yes, I have.
Great place to be able to see a whole bunch of adoption resources based on different types of user personas across all the Microsoft 365 products. So that's a good place to go as well. But yeah, that's kind of what Fast Track provides. You know, a lot of my customers can't believe it's free, but it is part of a customer subscription that they have.
All right, so I'll make sure that the links that Jeff mentioned there are in the show notes, so you can go and visit that and have a look at it. The last thing, Jeff, for everybody out there is basically how can they keep up with what you're doing, what you're putting out, the information you're sharing, and if they do want to contact you after the fact and maybe follow up with any questions on what you've spoken about today, how could they do that?
Well, I used to have a blog, but I don't have a blog anymore. But if they go to about.me/Jeffa36, they can send me an email or they can connect to me on LinkedIn. Typically, most of my stuff is on LinkedIn these days. It's easy to find me on LinkedIn, so I'm there. That's the main place that I'm hanging out.
Right. I'll make sure that all that stuff is in there and people can use that to get in contact with you. Again, take this opportunity to thank Jeff for coming on once again and sharing all that great information, getting us up to date. And I would also echo everything there about taking advantage of the amount of resources that Microsoft does provide, especially a lot of these free ones, which, again, I see there's not a lot of people out there who are taking advantage of. I just need to know about them. So, again, put these in your list here and use them regularly. They're always updated. They always have the latest and greatest information. So, again, take that advantage of that. And once again, I'll take this opportunity to thank Jeff very much for his time today and the knowledge he shared with us.
Thanks again, Robert. Appreciate you having me on again.
Excellent. No problem.
Let's not leave it as long this time. Huh?
Probably. Yeah. We can probably sneak out of our offices. Maybe the boss might not be watching, so I think we can probably achieve that.
We could.
Much easier. Cheers. All right. So again, I'll take this opportunity to thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.